This is NBC Nightly News, Tuesday, April 11th. Reported by John Chancellor, with David Brinkley's Journal.
Good evening on quite a busy news day. The war in Vietnam continued on a high level, and another American aircraft carrier steamed away today, presumably for the war zone. We'll have pictures of the carrier and film from one of the fronts in Vietnam. In other news, a New Jersey congressman, Cornelius Gallagher, has been indicted for tax evasion. The Justice Department was in court today trying to roll back school busing in Nashville. David Brinkley is back from vacation with some sulfurous thoughts about taxes. And the war story today is somewhat more optimistic. The North Vietnamese offensive campaign in South Vietnam is now in its 13th day, and while no one knows what the enemy has up his sleeve, the balance today is in favor of the South Vietnamese. In the north, there was some fighting near Hue with heavy enemy losses, but no real change, although a South Vietnamese firebase there is surrounded and under attack. There was some fighting in the central highlands, where the biggest enemy drive may still come, but nothing decisive. And north of Saigon, along Route 13, the enemy still surrounds the provincial capital of An Loc, but a strong South Vietnamese force is moving slowly up the road, and with them is our correspondent, Arthur Lord.
This is part of a 7,000-man force trying to relieve the besieged garrison at An Loc, the provincial capital, 15 miles up the road. The drive is spearheaded by South Vietnamese paratroopers from the 1st Airborne Brigade. Behind the paratroopers is an armored column from the South Vietnamese 21st Division, nearly 5,000 men who were brought up from the Mekong Delta to support the operation. The 21st Division is one of Saigon's worst units, so it's doubtful that they'll see much action. The U.S. military command has taken a keen interest in this operation. High-ranking officers often fly to the front to get a first-hand briefing.
General, you said your aim is to kill them. How do you propose to do that?
CAC air. And with Arvin soldiers.
How do you think the Arvin have done so far in this operation?
Magnificent. Magnificent. The morale is high, and they're doing a tremendous job.
General, do you expect them to push them right on out of the country and back into Cambodia?
I'm going to kill them all before I get to Cambodia.
Most of the fighting around Chom Thon was just off the highway. Companies of paratroopers moved in to suspected enemy positions. The North Vietnamese have taken some losses in the fighting, but exactly how badly they've been hurt hasn't yet been determined. A few have been captured. This 20-year-old North Vietnamese soldier was taken prisoner after he was wounded in the leg. He told his captors he came south in 1971. And crossed into South Vietnam from Cambodia when the North Vietnamese offensive began. The drive up Highway 13 has gone well so far. Whatever resistance these paratroopers have met, they've so far managed to beat back. The South Vietnamese seem to have a good momentum going. If they can sustain this push, they should be able to reach An Loc and break the siege on the provincial capital. Arthur Lord, NBC News, on Highway 13 near Chom Thon, South Vietnam.
And at the White House, there was a WASAG meeting. WASAG stands for Washington Special Action Group. Today, it provided some of the information President Nixon got on the war. Richard Valeriani reports.
The president reportedly heard some mildly encouraging news along these lines. In Military Region 1, below the DMZ, the South Vietnamese defensive lines have stabilized, even though bad weather has hampered airstrikes. And some units are counterattacking. In Region 2, heavy B-52 raids have apparently prevented the communists from getting their planned offensive in the Central Highlands off the ground. In Region 3, which includes Saigon, the South Vietnamese are holding their own, but the North Vietnamese have produced a surprising amount of heavy equipment and are regrouping for another major attack. Region 4, the Delta, does not appear to have any serious problems. One piece of ominous news, the North Vietnamese have committed about 100,000 troops to their offensive, but only 50,000 have seen action so far, which means that heavy fighting still lies ahead. There is enough concern here about the overall situation that National Security Advisor Henry Kissinger is expected to postpone his planned trip to Japan this weekend. Richard Valeriani, NBC News at the White House.
Although no ground troops are being sent back to Vietnam from the United States, ships and planes are being sent there. More Phantom fighter bombers and another squadron of nearly 20 B-52 bombers is on the way. And John Dancy was at dockside today when the carrier Saratoga steamed out of her home port at Jacksonville, Florida.
The attack carrier Saratoga had been scheduled to leave next month for a routine cruise in the Mediterranean. But suddenly, a few days ago, plans were changed. Men were recalled from leave and brought back to the ship from service schools. Plans were obviously being made to get underway nearly a month early. Nobody would say for publication where the ship was going, but every one of the 4,700 men aboard understood that the Saratoga was headed for Vietnam. The signs were unmistakable. Ammunition was being loaded in quantity. Wing tanks were being put aboard to go on the five squadrons of fighters and bombers that would join the ship once she was out to sea. This morning, with all the preparations made, everything loaded aboard, the Saratoga prepared to leave port. Leave-taking is as old as war itself, and the people who've been through it say no matter how many times you've done it, it's always hard.
Nothing anybody can really say. Just have to accept it, that's all.
Well, there's not much you can do about it, I don't guess. Grin and bear.
You ever get used to this sort of thing?
No.
Until a few days ago, the men of the Saratoga and their wives and families and sweethearts could take comfort from the fact that the Vietnam War seemed to be fading away. But now, for all of them, it is beginning again. John Dancy, NBC News, in Jacksonville, Florida.
Pardon me. I understand there's a Pittsburgh paint store around here somewhere.
Yeah, I've seen it, but I forget.
Hey, what kind of a bird are you?
I'm the Pittsburgh peacock.
What happened?
Where am I?
All of a sudden,
I can't
see. Fantastic colors. I mean...
Pardon me, officer. I'm looking for a Pittsburgh paint dealer.
Right around the... What do you think you're doing out here?
I'm the Pittsburgh Peacock.
Hey, what's going on?
Here I am.
Good.
At a Pittsburgh paint dealer, they understand dynamic color.
That's the shade I want for my kitchen, and that one right there for the powder room.
Whatever's right. Where would you like me to work?
A little to one side, actually.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You wouldn't take a bath with something made to wash your clothes. You wouldn't wash your clothes with something made to wash your hair. So why brush your dentures with a family toothpaste that's mild enough for children? DentuCream is a powerful toothpaste that gets dentures clean and fresh with special ingredients no family toothpaste has. Because family toothpaste isn't made for false teeth. And DentuCream is.
Are you taking regular aspirin tablets for arthritis minor pain? Arthritis minor pain occasionally flares up, makes you feel stiff. Now you can take a different tablet, Arthritis Pain Formula by the makers of Anacin. Compared to regular aspirin tablets, Arthritis Pain Formula contains 50% more of this medication that doctors recommend most. And double buffering makes it gentle on your stomach. For hours of temporary relief, Arthritis Pain Formula.
President Nixon went on radio and television about a month ago with his new program for a moratorium on school busing for racial desegregation and more money for the educational quality of slum schools. That program is presently stuck in the Senate because the administration couldn't find more than two witnesses to support its contention that more money in ghetto schools means better education. But the administration is moving in the courts. A Justice Department team was involved today in a Nashville, Tennessee busing case. The arguments took place in a federal court in Cincinnati, and Carl Stern was there.
Lawyers for the Nashville School Board came to the U.S. Court of Appeals to argue before a three-judge panel that a busing plan imposed last September was causing too much hardship. They were joined by Deputy Assistant U.S. Attorney General K. William O'Connor. It was the first time the government has gone to court to redeem the president's televised pledge a month ago to try to roll back busing. The court's reaction to O'Connor indicated the administration is going to have a cool reception. Judge George Edwards said, "We've been trying this case for 17 years. Now you want us to start all over again." Said O'Connor, "We came in at the 11th hour because of the president's message." Judge Edwards, "Does a speech by the president change the interpretation of the Constitution as decreed by the Supreme Court?" Judge Wade McCree, "What has Nashville done to follow the Constitution? Has it done anything but oppose efforts of the plaintiffs?" Judge Anthony Celebrezze, "You're here only because policy has changed. At the rate we're going, these children will probably be grandparents before we come up with a solution." O'Connor, "The Supreme Court will decide what, if any, policy changes will be made, and the Justice Department will enforce them." Judge Edwards, "I'm glad to hear that. I realize you are here because you were told to come here, and I won't press you any further." The judges are expected to give short shrift to the appeal. Government lawyers move next to Richmond, where they will argue against a busing plan on Thursday. The administration has never fared well in court trying to stop busing, but it's back in court now because the alternative move, the moratorium on busing requested by the president, doesn't seem to be getting anywhere in Congress. Carl Stern, NBC News, Cincinnati, Ohio.
The Cost of Living Council has examined more than 100 quarterly reports from some of the country's biggest businesses and found the startling news that more than 20% of these companies have been illegally increasing their margins of profits and may have to be taken to court to have their prices rolled back. A nonprofit research organization called the Tax Foundation Incorporated has found that the average American spends more hours working to pay his taxes than he does for food, clothing, and shelter. As the foundation reckons it, the average worker in an 8-hour day spends 2 hours and 34 minutes working to pay federal, state, and local taxes, and 2 hours and 31 minutes working to pay for food, clothing, and shelter every day. Which brings us to David Brinkley, who has been looking into another aspect of taxation.
By those figures, the average person works more hours supporting government than supporting his own family. Well, that is ridiculous on its face, but it's not all. If his tax return due next week is even slightly unusual, extra income or deductions or anything, he will find the government has dozens of booklets to read for sale at 15 or 20 cents each. An ordinary intelligence and ability to understand English are not enough, since they are written in bureaucratese, an unknown language for which no one has ever found a Rosetta Stone. There's an almost infinite variety of instructions, exhortations, and threats. But here's a sample, and by no means the full list, of special instruction sheets the government makes available. There may be other reading matter equally boring, but there is none equally expensive.
Every morning, every evening, getting close.
that's only a small sample. It is self-evident that any public policy requiring that much explaining has got something profoundly wrong with it. And if, after all that explaining, it still comes out that of two people making the same income, one pays a lot and the other pays a little, or none, it is self-evident there is something wrong with that. It is so clearly evident it has become one of the big issues in this year's political campaign. And nearly every candidate is promising reform. But only Congress can deliver it. And if they can't write a tax law that is fair and that people can understand, they ought to look for somebody who can. John?
Congressman Cornelius O. Gallagher, Democrat of New Jersey and a seven-term veteran of the House of Representatives, was named today in a federal indictment in Newark, New Jersey. He is accused of perjury, conspiracy, and of evading more than $100,000 in personal income taxes. Gallagher was not available for comment.
You're having a hectic week. Here's a tip for the weekend. Pick up a couple of six-packs of Michelob in case some unexpected guests drop in, and then hope nobody shows up. You know, sometimes just doing nothing can be a pleasure. As long as you have Michelob. So remember, be ready to surprise people. Serve Michelob.
The letter for today is A. A is for air conditioner.
And A is for air sweep. A real cool way to sweep clean, fresh air from side to side and up and around. There's no draft with our A, just cool, fresh air throughout the room, even in corners. Air Sweep is brought to you by the letter G for Gibson, the only air conditioner that rates an A for Air Sweep. Gibson.
There was more testimony in the Senate today about Richard Kleindienst, the Attorney General designate. Kleindienst has been charged with interfering in behalf of a U.S. attorney in San Diego who was being investigated for obstructing justice. Today, an assistant attorney general testified that Kleindienst did the right thing, although the U.S. attorney involved was guilty of highly improper conduct. And Paul Duke reports on another of today's developments which could affect the Kleindienst nomination.
The big thing still is the ITT case, and the Democrats are now stepping up their pressure to force White House aides to tell about their involvement. Today, one prominent Democrat said he is withdrawing support for Kleindienst until presidential assistant Peter Flanagan testifies.
If the White House wants this confirmation to go through, it ought to be willing to stop refusing to give to the committee and the Senate the information in the possession of the White House aides about their conversations and transactions with third parties and the Department of Justice. And as far as I am concerned, I have reached a point where I expect to oppose in the committee any action whatever on this confirmation until Peter M. Flanagan and the other White House aides come down here just like other people and tell us what they know about this subject.
You won't vote for the confirmation of Mr. Kleindienst if Mr. Flanagan does not testify.
I will vote not even to consider the nomination till they come down and testify.
Senator Irvin Stan could be a significant turning point in the Kleindienst fight. The North Carolina conservative is widely respected among his colleagues, and his opposition could make it difficult for Kleindienst to win confirmation as Attorney General. Paul Duke, NBC News at the Capitol.
However, a White House spokesman said later this afternoon he didn't contemplate Mr. Flanagan going up to the Hill and testifying. The ITT business got even more complex today when Congressman Bob Wilson of California asked for a possible perjury investigation of the head of ITT's Washington office, W.R. Merriam. Wilson and Merriam's testimony has differed on some points. In other news, the Apollo 16 astronauts passed their last big physical exam today. Their moonship is ready for liftoff on Sunday. The Federal Aviation Administration says United Airlines and Pacific Southwest Airlines weren't careful enough in screening passengers recently. Both airlines had planes hijacked, and the FAA could fine both airlines.
Came here yesterday, $2.50, all you could eat.
pate, pickled herring, egg foo young. Who could decide? So I ate everything. Not a little bit of everything. Everything. Thought they'd have to wheel me out. Took two Alka-Seltzers.
Alka-Seltzer neutralizes all the acid your stomach has churned out. For your upset stomach and headache, take Alka-Seltzer and feel better fast.
Maybe just one stuffed artichoke.
Painter gets some funny calls these days. Like this man, in a hurry because he's moving. Use the best, he says. And that's Benjamin Moore's Moorguard. Great for do-it-yourselfers, too. Okay. Even Moorguard takes a little time. He may have to finish his job himself. He's still in luck, though, because Moorguard's available everywhere. Same great quality all across the country.
See your nearby Benjamin Moore dealer for all your painting needs.
If Noah's Ark had had two of everything, including termites, for a termite inspection, call Terminix, the nationwide pest control experts.
In Russian-American relations today, these items: a new cultural agreement was signed providing for more exchange of musical and dance groups. It's been learned that the president will visit Moscow, Leningrad, and Baku on the Caspian Sea when he visits the Soviet Union next month. And in Helsinki, there was another SALT meeting on the reduction of nuclear arms. These are pictures of the earthquake, which devastated a large area of southern Iran yesterday. The government said at least 4,000 people died, and the death toll could go much higher. Dozens of villages were destroyed. The people of the province of Pars dug out their dead from the rubble, and then they mourned them. The only sounds to be heard, said the governor of the province, are groans, moans, and loud weeping. The Morning Telegraph died today, a sports newspaper founded in New York 139 years ago. Died apparently because of a strike by printers making a minimum of $281 a week. Congressman Cornelius Gallagher, indicted today for income tax evasion in New Jersey, says the charges are untrue and political. He did comment. Prices rose today in heavy trading on the stock markets. The Dow Jones Industrials went up 4.5 points. On the New York Exchange, an average share gained 16 cents. On the American Exchange, an average share gained 12 cents. And finally tonight, we will be taking our last look at the Tsadai, that gentle Stone Age tribe of cave dwellers living in a remote rainforest on the island of Mindanao in the Philippines. In this final film, our correspondent Jack Reynolds will talk about the future safety of the Tsadai. Integrity might be a better word. And we'll also see how our film crew had to be rescued from the rainforest.
What of the future of the Tsadai? President Marcos has declared their area a national sanctuary. That means protection from loggers and land speculators. But the tribe is small, 12 adults and 12 children. Several of the people are old, and the jungle has no mercy on age. One man seems very sick. He tires easily and can no longer take part in the food-gathering activities of the tribe. The children are, as always, the hope for the future. There are 8 boys and 4 girls. One man asked Elizalde to bring him a wife. After all, Diwata, God, is all-powerful, and a simple request like that should pose no problem. The request is still pending.
I think this might be a perfect place to start with.
There is talk of 2 other groups further back in the forest. The next step for Elizalde's Panaman Foundation is to have the Tsadai try to find these people. They were in contact, but that was many years ago, and the Tsadai are not sure they can locate these groups again. If contact is reestablished, the future looks even brighter, and the anthropologists will have a better chance to study man in his most primitive state. Carlos Fernandez, a young Filipino anthropologist, is working with Panamin on the study of the tribe.
I think we have here one of the last chances of anthropology to take a close look at man in as close a situation to his pristine state. I guess we will never know how much man has gained by acquiring civilization until we are able to know how much he has lost.
The expedition had a dramatic ending. Word was received that Panamin's helicopter had broken down. It would take weeks to obtain the necessary parts and fly them to Mindanao. The radio batteries were good for a day or so at the most. Food and supplies were running low. It would have been a long and dangerous walk out of the jungle. The U.S. Air Force was contacted, and within 24 hours, a rescue helicopter and C-130 tanker were on the way. It would have been impossible for the Air Force chopper to come in over the tree platform. The downdraft from its blades would have destroyed the fragile structure. A new landing pad was cleared on a nearby mountaintop, and the 46 members of the expedition waited with their equipment on the mountain. Flares were fired through the cloud cover. And soon the rescue chopper circled the pad. It was too small to land. And the helicopter hovered while the paramedics helped people aboard. General Lindbergh, who had helped organize the evacuation, was cool and unflappable. There were a number of trips, but within a matter of a few hours, the rescue effort was completed. In the helicopter, Elizalde and General Lindbergh were already talking about the next trip back to the Tasadai. At the Tipoli village where the expedition had started, the entire tribe turned out to welcome Elizalde, Lindbergh, and their men with a colorful ceremony. The story has a happy ending. The expedition is safe. The Tasadai will be permitted to live undisturbed and in peace. The scientists will have sufficient time to study the tribe to find out what this most recently discovered member of the human family can teach us about ourselves. Jack Reynolds, NBC News, in the Tiboli settlement at the edge of the rainforest in Mindanao.
Who says there isn't adventure left in the world? There is. There is. Good night for NBC News.